This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Today, Charlotte and 100 other cities will be submitting their proposals to Amazon, the retail behemoth, to become the location for the company's second North American headquarters. In reality, Charlotte jumped the gun and delivered their package yesterday afternoon. Whatever city is chosen will be the recipient of what has been described as the biggest economic development project in American history. Amazon is throwing numbers around like $5 billion and 50,000 high-paying jobs. Our city has aggressively pursued this opportunity, but it will come with some very pricey strings attached. Amazon has made it clear that they will be expecting the kind of incentives that may require legislative action. The Charlotte Business Journal, in conjunction with their sister papers owned by American City Business Journals, researched the kinds of incentives Amazon has already received from cities chosen to be home to their warehouse and distribution network. The publications also looked into the officials who have been eager to cut deals for a spot in this ever-growing supply chain. Among the 33 states with Amazon centers, South Carolina ranks third for the amount of known subsidies given to Amazon. The Charlotte Business Journal reports the figure at $100 million. We'll take a look at who may have a competitive advantage when it comes to handing out incentives, whether incentives ever really pay off, and more later in the program. But first, we want to explore what the business journals discovered. We're joined by Ken Elkins, senior staff writer for the Charlotte Business Journal, and Craig Douglas, director of editorial research and analysis for American City Business Journals, the parent company, and both are with us in our Spirit Square studio. Good morning and welcome.
Hey, good morning.
Good to see you. Though today is the deadline for submitting proposals to Amazon, Charlotte put its best foot forward yesterday, and you reported yesterday afternoon in the Business Journal that the Charlotte Regional Partnership, which is spearheading the effort here, shipped off a custom-made wooden box sealed with custom-imprinted tape, sure to please anyone, I'm sure. The box contained our proposal. Do you know what's in the box?
We've got some idea. The most interesting thing to me was they're submitting 22 sites. I presumed we would only submit one site, just go for broke and go for one site. But they're submitting to 22 sites in six counties in the Charlotte region.
I mean, I know when you give a birthday present to somebody, you want it to look nice. But what was the point of having a custom made box with a custom made ribbon on it?
The box looks nice.
Yes,
but how can you restate that?
Yes, but does that really impress business people? I mean, really, will they go, wow, they must be really serious about this? I mean, Tucson sent us a cactus.
What you prefer, a cactus or a box? You know, a nice box at that.
A reusable nice box.
Right.
This is a company that ships cardboard boxes on a daily basis in the millions, so a box is a box probably at the end of the day.
Yeah, but to them, sure. Now, we've been written off by a number. We've talked about this 1,000 times before on this program. We've been written off by a number of other entities. The New York Times said, no way, Jose, we're not getting this. And I think there's an article in the New York Times today saying the best place they could go if they really wanted to, because Amazon has this idea of remaking an American city, might be Toronto. But Ronnie Bryant, the CEO of Charlotte Regional Partnership, believes we have a good shot, and this presentation will give us a good chance of making the short list. They're going to announce this in January, right? When will they announce the short list?
I think January is the timetable. I'm not sure Amazon has ever actually said, you know, we're going to announce in January, we're going to select the final person. We have to depend on other people who look at Amazon and say, well, we'll have it in January, and then we'll have the final announcement, say, March or so.
So have we heard anything from Amazon or through your research about how Amazon has chosen other cities and how other cities have gotten themselves involved in their distribution network about our real chances? Do we really have a shot at this? Is Ronnie Bryant right?
You know, I think there are two ways to look at Amazon. There's the distribution network that, you know, is spreading across the country, but then they also have this network of technology centers in about a dozen cities nationwide, and I think from my standpoint, that's the best indicator of where they're likely to go with an HQ2. They definitely want to be near. They've made it clear they want to be near a strong university system. You know, there's going to be technology jobs associated with this, so they're going to want to be part of an ecosystem that has a strong technology system already in place. And so I think that those cities, a lot of them are bunched up in the East Coast, make the most sense if it is going to be in the United States. Your point about Toronto is a good one. They've been sort of vague about where this is going to be. They keep saying North America. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that could be Mexico.
That's a key word there, North America. You report the Amazon founder, Jeff Bezos, has built a net worth of roughly $85 billion. Wow. As the result of building his highly successful company, which taps, of course, into American consumerism and our need to have it now, our rapacious gratification culture. You also report that Amazon.com has received at least $1.24 billion in taxpayer-funded subsidies and incentives around the country. How big a role have these subsidies actually played in the company's growth versus just the fact that they're doing the right thing at the right time and they're serving a need that people want served?
I think they play a big role. We have testimonials from economic development folks, city officials throughout the country who have made clear that when Amazon came knocking, that it was very open about a need for funding in some situations, that it was playing various cities off of one another, that, you know, if this couldn't happen, whether it was fast-track permitting and zoning, that sort of thing, or infrastructure improvements, if those couldn't be wrapped up in a short time frame, they were going to go elsewhere.
Well, offering these incentives, clearly, I guess, it's one of the things that Amazon wants from a city, and therefore, if you offer those incentives, the city, quote-unquote, wins. We'll talk about whether or not that's true a little bit later on. But without this, I mean, if he, Jeff Bezos, is worth $85 billion personally, the company must be worth scads more than that. So $1.24 billion in taxpayer-funded incentives sounds like a drop in the bucket when you're talking about it. So how important could they really be? Yes, it's probably a great idea if I'm Jeff Bezos to try to milk the turnip as much as I can, but wouldn't they have grown just as fast and been just as successful without these incentives?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a company with about $30 billion in cash as of the last year end. So to your point, is $1 billion going to make or break their growth?
Yeah.
Probably not, but I think they have a very savvy communications and expansion strategy underway. They have a team that's pretty ruthless and inefficient in terms of how it the pace it works and where it wants to locate. And, you know, we keep hearing about these algorithms that Amazon has in terms of where it needs to be. You know, the idea that they need to be near population centers would sort of hint that they don't need these subsidies at the end of the day. They need to be near the population centers. But at the same time, they've unrolled the strategy that they are going to be putting cities against one another in a competitive process to see which one is more amenable to them to come and locate.
So when you talk about incentives, collective incentives over time and over cities of $1.24 billion, how do they compare, or how do the incentives in each individual city or region has given to Amazon over time, how do they compare with what other major corporations are getting when they locate in your area?
Don't really have a corporation-by-corporation comparison, but if we talk Amazon in South Carolina, just south of here, we're talking $100 million for two centers down there. Sure, it's not billions, but still it's $100 million.
Well, what did BMW get from South Carolina to locate there, or whoever else has been there recently or located in – because they seem to be winning over North Carolina in South Carolina recently.
Probably more for BMW. They probably got more incentives.
Because of more jobs or because of something, some other factor?
Jobs, just the impact on South Carolina, the Spartanburg area economy. I mean, there are 9,000 employees at BMW now. They're making some cars exclusively at that plant.
Right.
And it's very important to that economy. So, yes, they got big incentives.
So you point out, the Business Journal points out, that the $1.24 billion in taxpayer-funded subsidies and incentives does not include hundreds of millions of dollars in additional breaks from state sales tax abatements and other tax abatements and land arrangements, Was it always this way with Amazon because of the company's nationwide footprint, or did these things come to Amazon after it grew so large?
I'd say this is a fairly new phenomenon. I think you can really trace it back to about 2011 when the company was really starting to get a lot of pressure from states about sales tax collections, and there was definitely a pivot by Amazon to not only from an operating standpoint in deciding to sort of be its own logistics company, and rather than rely on a FedEx or a UPS, it's rolling out its own warehouses and distribution infrastructure, planes, trucks. So I think in doing that, the strategy shift, there was a realization that it was going to have to start paying sales taxes in these states. The regulatory framework around them was sort of collapsing in. So we saw a noticeable shift in 2011. A lot of deals were being struck with states from that point onward. And to your point, you know, a lot of these incentives that we detailed were specific to facilities and you know, tangible assets, whereas there are hundreds of millions more in sales tax abatements that we didn't even calculate.
Wow. That's Craig Douglas, who's director of editorial research at American Business Journals. How many papers in the American Business Journals chain?
There's 40 around
40,
the
and how many papers were involved in this, just the ones that are either Amazon location in areas that have Amazon locations or who are bidding for this Amazon headquarters? How many papers were involved in this research?
This was our first time of incorporating all 40 of our newsrooms into a single project, and it really is a once-in-a-generation kind of story that, you know, Amazon is expanding so quickly and it's disrupting so many industries and reshaping cities for the most part, that we saw this as a unique opportunity for us to go after it.
So how did you gather and distill the information that you collected?
You know, it was old-fashioned community reporting. You know, I mean, we have great reporting staffs in each of those cities, and the marching orders, it was never intended to be any kind of gotcha sort of piece. It was really, you know, this is right in our sweet spot. It's about commercial real estate. It's about jobs. And so really the marching orders were just go after this. Just tell us what Amazon's presence is in your city and what the effect has been.
And you write about business for business.
That's right.
That's what your companies do. That's what your newspapers do, and we've been talking about this as an economic development tool, but if we get this changes the landscape for any city that gets this, does it not? This headquarters?
Absolutely. I mean, the thing that I'm...
That means it changes the landscape for other already existing businesses.
Oh, sure. I mean, if you are a real estate agent, if you're a restaurant owner or, you know, aspiring restaurant owner, you know, the prospect of having 50,000 people on average earning above $100,000 a year is a great opportunity. I mean, you know, and this is different than I think Amazon's other expansions where it's landed incentives from states to build a warehouse and this sort of thing. This really will reshape a city. It's going to redefine a city, even a city that has an established technology base, you know, a Boston or an Atlanta, go on down the list. I think, you know, this will rebrand a city, but the one thing that I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you've heard otherwise, but you know, the one thing Amazon hasn't specified is whether it really does want to have sort of more of a social mission here. That you know, does it want to go to a Detroit or a Cleveland and sort of revive a city, or does it want to go to an established city where the infrastructure is already in place?
I'm not sure they want to revive a city. I think they want to go into a very active community with this set of criteria.
I agree.
That's Ken Elkins, who's a senior staff writer for the Business Journal. We'll continue in just a moment. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Aldersgate, 231 acres of senior living in the heart of Charlotte, featuring cottage homes, apartments, and villas. Details at aldersgateexpansion.com. And the U.S. National Whitewater Center hosting Fall Cyclofest tomorrow through Sunday, featuring brands from the cycling industry as well as races, live music, and demos. Information at usnwc.org. Well, coming up tomorrow, CLT is Prime Day made headlines this week as Charlotte met the deadline. We did it yesterday to submit a bid to Amazon to be the home of its second headquarters. We talk about our bid. Early voting starts this week. Mecklenburg County has reached a deal for CMPD to patrol rural areas around the Charlotte region after months of negotiation. Plus, the state Senate overrides yet another Roy Cooper Vito. Those stories and more on the Local News Roundup tomorrow on this program at 9.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, the four American Green Berets who died in Niger. We'll look at their mission and the uproar over President Trump's comments on their deaths. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point, coming up from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Amazon.com and the potential of Charlotte becoming their second headquarters location, and the series, it was a series in a way, that the American City Business Journals with the Charlotte Business Journal cooperating, all 40 newspapers did to investigate the economic impact of Amazon in cities where it has been and what other cities are doing and what city officials did to jump through hoops. While we've been talking, Twitter comment, just hire a bunch of former South Carolina government officials. They're experts on winning big business deals over North Carolina. South Carolina gave BMW $325 million adjusted for inflation and incentives to come to South Carolina in the early 90s. That's from one of our producers. And Ken on Twitter says, would love to have them here, but something incredibly unbecoming about pimping ourselves out like this. Uh-huh. All right, we're here with Craig Douglas, Director of Editorial Research for American City Business Journals, and Ken Elkins, the Senior Staff Writer for the Charlotte Business Journal. How big is Amazon in terms of the number of employees they have across the country and their real estate footprint?
So they've reported 380,000 employees total. And their real estate footprint, that's a little bit more difficult to quantify. You know, what we were able to do is identify 150 million square feet of facilities across the country. That doesn't include their office spaces. So they lease a lot of their property. They don't own many of their properties. So
for a region vying to be a corporate headquarters, is that a red flag? Wouldn't you want them to own their office tower?
You know, I think it's kind of all it all gets sort of mixed into one big soup at the end of the day. You know, you're bringing in developers. You have, in some cases, these cities are offering up city-owned land. So how that all gets sorted out, you know, I remember GE when they moved to Boston. The city had owned the land that GE moved to and arranged something with the developer, and GE doesn't own it, but everybody sort of wins in the end, I guess.
We have a sorting and distribution center here in Charlotte. One's in Concord. I think another is planned for Kannapolis.
That's right.
South Carolina ranks third for the amount of known subsidies given to the company, et cetera. How many facilities and employees are in the Palmetto State? How many employees work here in this region for Amazon in the distribution centers? Or is it mostly robots?
No robots yet. Well, a few robots yet. But, you know, we're easily talking maybe 5,000 people in all of those five operations.
What has the presence of these distribution centers meant so far to Charlotte and to Kannapolis, et cetera?
They've been sort of behind the scenes. They're in the Concord area. It's been operating quietly over there in, you know, like 200,000 square feet. I think that's a figure. And it's an employer. Wages aren't great, but it's an employer. And in most cases, they do lease the operations.
Mm. We're vying to be the corporate headquarters, and the $5 billion has been thrown out as a figure, which I guess is attached to the salaries they'll pay to the 30,000 to 50,000 people they have projected to ultimately work in that corporate headquarters with six-figure salaries. Amazon, as I think you mentioned, Craig, acts as a disruptor of traditional business and retail. Should we be concerned about this? Should Charlotte businesses be, or should any city vying for this, should the business in those cities be concerned about that? Or is a corporate headquarters not what we're talking about when we talk about retail and other business disruption?
So I think you're right. I don't think HQ2 is necessarily something that we need to be concerned about as a disruptor of local existing industries or employers. But to build off of what Ken said, you know, I think every time Amazon opens one of these facilities, The positives are the jobs that it brings, the local economic ripple effect. But it also shortens its delivery cycles to local consumers. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the prospect of ordering something and getting it delivered that day or the next day, you know, that suddenly – that level of convenience suddenly – presents a real threat to local malls, to local retailers, you know, just go right down the line.
In the course of your investigations around the country with American Cities Business Journals, you turned up, you quote, I quote here, you turned up little in the form of skepticism or concerns voiced by community leaders when Amazon comes to town. Few have asked whether subsidizing Amazon's expansion is worth the cost or how a company with around $30 billion in cash can possibly have a need for funding. Why aren't those questions being asked?
Well, just think about it. You have a huge company, and it's a famous company. Everybody wants a piece of Amazon. Coming in and offering jobs, they're offering investment. The Kannapolis Center that's being built now expects to get like a $4 million subsidy. It's a $10 million investment. But basically, these are jobs and opportunity that Amazon is offering to a community.
Well, San Antonio, Texas, has passed on bidding for this headquarters. San Jose, California, is not bidding on this. San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo told Fox Business Network public subsidies are a bad deal for taxpayers.
When you have cities throughout the country that are all in a bidding war in this way, then taxpayers throughout the country really lose. And I want to set a new tone. I think mayors throughout the country should stand up and say, we want to invest tax dollars where they have the most impact, the kinds of investments that really matter and move a city forward.
So now, is he saying that because San Jose is on the West Coast? It's not terribly far from Seattle, where the other headquarters already is, and he knows he's not in the running because they're going to put this thing somewhere else other than the West Coast. So he's safe in saying that and making a headline splash, or is he saying it because he really believes they shouldn't be in on the bidding on this? It's a bad deal for everybody.
Right. I think it's easier to say that if you're really not in the running. And I don't think Silicon Valley's in the running for an Amazon HQ2. But I think he's right in many ways. I the one thing that I think is a little bit concerning is the eagerness that we're seeing public officials raise a hand. And you know, we saw New Jersey already offer up $7 billion in potential incentives. Not really even knowing, you know, much detail about what HQ2 will be and what it presents long term.
And San Jose Mayor Liccardo also says that it is the availability of talent that makes the difference to these companies, not incentives. Really? It's talent over incentives? Really?
Talent's important. Yeah, you got to have folks that will actually man the line in assortment and distribution centers. You've got to have the IT people when HQ2 comes to your city. Yes.
If you put this headquarters, I don't know, in Ridgeway, South Carolina, won't the IT people come because
you build
it's
it, they
Amazon?
Will come.
Exactly.
They will, but you'll start up a little quicker with opening in a metropolitan center. And Amazon has said we want to be in a $1 billion population plus.
Yes.
No dollars here. I'm talking
throwing billions and millions.
Yeah.
So this search for a second headquarters to the company has cities and regions and states salivating. Charlotte Chamber President Bob Morgan says our acquisition of this headquarters would set the tone for Charlotte for the next century. I don't think that is an exaggeration. It's been described by economists as the largest economic development project in history. And yet, you guys write in the Business Journal, what comes next could very well affirm or suffocate the notion of the American dream. Why?
Well, you bring such a large entity into Charlotte. Immediately, you've got other considerations. They're going to take up the housing stock. They're going to buy the housing stock. The employees are. It just basically changes the complexion of a company if you bring in 50,000 new employees.
And I think, you know, I mean, I think if you just look in sort of helicopter view of Amazon, the word antitrust is starting to perk up to the surface. But what industry is it really a monopoly? It's not a monopoly in any industry. It's sort of a leading player in a lot of industries, and it continues to expand into new sectors and that sort of thing.
Plus, I mean, they use a lot of their products don't necessarily come from Amazon. Other people are using Amazon as their distribution network. So theoretically possible, is it not, for Macy's or Belk to just become a vendor on Amazon?
Absolutely. And you see a lot of mom-and-pop vendors who make sort of, you know, their own custom goods are selling on Amazon. So it's giving rise to a whole sort of smaller entity economy that can, you know, they now have a platform to sell globally through Amazon. So there are positives and you know, negatives to the disruption that Amazon is causing. And it's not clear where this is all going.
So you have said that, well, I think they're going to buy a TV network. Somebody told me that yesterday. I think they're right. You've said that Amazon's success at getting incentives comes from their, quote, very refined process and great communication strategy. When it comes to town, it's big tech, it's thousands of jobs, the ability to work with robots and sophisticated logistics centers, and so they don't get any opposition. Really?
Well,
robots are all that sexy?
So this is what prompted this project in the first place. It was about a year ago, and not a week was going by that one of our papers throughout the country was reporting on a big employer scoping out big space, bringing hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs, technology company, go right down the line. And so there was this sort of groundswell of buzz and excitement that would come with this, and then before you know it, it was Amazon. But at that point, the horse was already out of the barn.
Right.
They had put down stakes in that area with agreements with local officials. And that's what we mean by the refined communication strategy, that this was very consistent, the way that they were entering communities and in building an excitement for essentially at the end of the day what were warehouse jobs. And if you look at the contrast that Walmart has faced, you know, over its plans to expand nationally, there's always opposition to Walmart coming into a community because it's going to disrupt, you know, local mom and pop stores. But Amazon has mastered this. I think they've learned well from,
Walmart. The headquarters won't disrupt that. The headquarters will just be another headquarters. You also say your research at the business journals shows Amazon is excellent, and I think you've mentioned this today already, at identifying available incentives and leveraging cities and states one against the other. And they did a very curious thing. They opened this request for proposal publicly. They usually do that behind the scenes. You don't know that this RFP is going on. You just start seeing these submissions. But they made a national announcement saying, okay, send us your thoughts and we'll decide. So everybody knows who's competing against everybody else. So that means they've kind of already done their homework, which I want to talk about in a second. But they've also told people to submit some proposals with incentives that may require legislative action. Wow. Most cities haven't walked away from that. Are legislatures ready to just give away the house?
Perhaps not give away the house, but basically, yes, they will change the rules for big companies. They've done it in the past. BMW required change in legislation.
So Melissa writes, if it's going to take new legislation for incentives, why does Charlotte think we would get anything fast-tracked over Raleigh in Raleigh? There's so much love between Charlotte and Raleigh, she says with a smile on her face.
Well, it's a good point. I mean, and this is, again, this is sort of the mastery that Amazon has displayed over the past few years in spurring cities to act, spurring public officials to act.
Given their use of algorithms to determine how things are going to be delivered and where these distribution centers need to be and how many products they need on a shelf on any given day to get it to you by the next day or that day after that afternoon for some reason, if they have these algorithms for their operation, isn't it fairly obvious that they already know precisely where they're going, that they precisely know right now, before anything is submitted, they've already decided?
I think you're right.
So what's the dog and pony show about?
Well, what would be the advantage to Amazon if they said, you know what, we want to go to Charlotte? Charlotte says, okay, you want to come here. You're one of the wealthiest companies in the world. You know, come on in. Versus saying, we're not sure where we want to go. Everybody, tell us what your best offer is going to be. And that prompts a Charlotte to then have to step up and think through what sort of incentive package.
So they're shaking the tree.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't think they've really stepped away from that notion at all. I think that's pretty clear.
You also say that although the presence of Amazon can be a game changer for a lot of struggling cities, officials can also be left with buyer's remorse when job totals fall short of expectations. How often has this been the case? And 30 to 50,000 jobs is what they're projecting for the headquarters city. Is that close to being accurate? I mean, how many jobs are at the headquarters of Bank of America?
Probably as many, more.
Okay.
But it falling short of expectations on incentives has happened before. It happened right here in North Carolina. It happened right here in Charlotte with Chiquita. We paid.
Yes.
Yeah, we started paying. We started paying Chiquita at least $150,000 to operate locate here, and the next thing we know, they've been bought and they're moving to Florida.
So there's a question, of course, of whether economic incentives to for-profit companies ever really pay off, or are they just big giveaways of public funds to private corporations? As we aggressively pursue this economic development project, we wanted to invite some people on who know about economic development. John Lasseter would be one of those people. He's going to join us for the rest of the show. He's the former chair of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina and a former member of Charlotte City Council. Welcome back to the program, John.
Thank you, Mike.
And Greg Leroy joins us by phone. He's the executive director of Good Jobs First, a national policy resource center for grassroots groups and public officials promoting corporate and government accountability in economic development. That phraseology comes right from their website. Greg Leroy, welcome to you as well.
Good to be with you, Mike.
And we'll keep Craig Douglas and Ken Elkins from the Business Journals here too. John, Charlotte's going after this potential headquarters with vigor. Should they be?
Sure. I think the nature of what North Carolina is and what it wants to be, whether it's Charlotte or Raleigh or Greensboro, anytime you can have a 50,000 person corporate headquarters, as Ken noted, it's literally a game changer for what you can accomplish, and it's a magnet for future investments of both large and small companies.
So Charlotte's in competition with at least 100 other cities, including Raleigh and Greensboro, or the Triad area, not to mention Atlanta. Governor Cooper has said this state will have a strong proposal.
We are taking significant steps to make sure that North Carolina makes the first cut, and then we're going to work on it even more to see which of our communities they are interested in. And I believe they should be, because this is a great state.
Now, he said the state. Charlotte's bidding on this. Raleigh is bidding on this. The Triad is bidding on this. Does the governor not care? Does the legislature not care which of the three areas gets it, or is a win a win?
Well, ultimately, a win's a win. You have hometown feelings if you're from one of those communities. But end of the day, if you drop this kind of an investment and job generator along kind of what we call the Piedmont Crescent, which is the I-85 corridor that runs from Charlotte all the way to the Triangle, the consequence is significant. And the other kinds of employers that are going to bring other jobs in those communities will benefit from the proximity of wherever that headquarters goes.
So these three cities and these three regions in North Carolina have made a bid. Is the state making its own bid? Only about 10 seconds. But
no, the state will be a player based upon it. You talked about legislative action. It would be things that the legislature or the governor can do to strengthen that bid.
Well, that's the governor talking. Have we heard from the legislature on this at all?
No, but you've seen evidence from the legislature in the past where they put dollars aside for this kind of a bid.
We'll talk about that and more, and we'll talk to Greg Leroy in a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members in Crescent Communities, presenting Lake James, a lakeside community at the base of the Blue Ridge Mountains, offering a new phase of home sites for custom home building. Details on offerings at lakejames.com. And Mecklenburg Area Catholic Schools hosting an open house at all schools, including Christ the King, on Tuesday, October 24th from 9:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Details at discovermacs.org. On point, questions swirl after four U.S. troops die in Niger. Tom Ashbrook and his guests will look at the Green Berets' mission there and the uproar over President Trump's comments on their deaths. That's coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock. A reminder that next Tuesday at 9, we're broadcasting this show from the McGlowan Theater here at Spirit Square for a mayoral debate between Vi Lyles and Kenny Smith. You're invited to attend, and you can get information at WFAE.org. We're coming right back.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
An American business has a big stake in the fate of the Iran nuclear deal.
It's your community. We help you understand it.
The meeting began with a discussion about training and CMPD outreach programs. Chedino said they didn't want the event to turn into a public trial for the Galindo shooting.
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
We're talking about Amazon and Charlotte as a potential headquarters for Amazon, or their second headquarters, this morning on Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins with Ken Elkin, senior staff writer for the Charlotte Business Journal, Craig Douglas, director of editorial research there. John Lasseter is the former chair of economic development of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, and Greg LeRoy, executive director of Good Jobs First. Greg, you agree with those who say that this is a big deal, that you've called this the trophy deal of the decade. Your organization evidently tracks economic development. Should Charlotteans be hopeful that we snag this trophy, or should we be cautious about it?
Oh, it is the deal of the decade, if not the quarter century, and I think every public official should approach this deal with terrific caution because of the frenzy associated with this unusual, as you put it, public auction. There's a real risk of overspending.
You've been quoted as saying that you're worried that cities will give away too much in their efforts to lose HQ or to lure HQ2, and that history is littered with deals that didn't pan out. Talk about
well,
that.
Well, certainly, yeah. I mean, we have laid out an analysis that shows that this sort of so-called mega deal trend has persisted, even though unemployment is low again and governments aren't especially flush. You'd think they'd be more stingy. And certainly, not only is the Chiquita deal that you all cited, but there's the Dell deal back in 2004, which then went belly up 2009, 2010 in Winston-Salem, which at the time was the biggest incentive package that the state had ever put together, subject of a one-day special session that rushed through the legislature. Very cautionary tale that way.
So you talk about you're worried that cities will give away too much. How much is too much?
Well, it depends, obviously, on how many jobs they create. But, you know, we've always recommended that these incentive deals be capped at no more than $50,000 per job, because even at that price, it's a question mark about whether taxpayers can ever break even. And the trouble is these big mega deals we're tracking now, they're averaging $658,000 per job, which is a rate at which taxpayers can never ever break even on these deals.
So I'm doing the calculation here. $50,000 yeah. per job, and they're projecting, let's just go with the top number, 50,000 jobs. That's, Lord, $2.5 billion.
$2.5 billion. Yeah, that's a big number.
That's a big, big, big number. Has that number been tossed around by anybody in this area that you know about?
Well, certainly, there's already the announced bid from New Jersey and the city of Newark totaling $7 billion. Which I think is a terrible idea and would involve gutting some existing caps, spending caps that exist on the major New Jersey state program involved there, as well as, I think, a very unfair carve-out of the two major local taxes in Newark. But certainly other site location consultants have talked about figures like that. It would shatter the all-time record for corporate headquarters deals. The current record for a headquarters deal is $660 million. Granted last year to a private company in Baltimore.
So, John, with your experience both in Charlotte and in the state, is the Triad, is the state of North Carolina in a position to, or would they be willing to or predisposed to coming up with a number like that, $2.5 billion in incentives?
Well, first you got to start from the premise that incentives aren't necessarily the primary reason a company chooses to move or build a new location. They make that decision based upon a lot of business metrics because the incentives themselves will not fund the activity. Incentives, however, become the competitive currency between those cities and states jockeying for that.
But if you're Nashville, Tennessee, and you decide you're going to offer $2.5 billion and Charlotte is not, but Charlotte has more talent, and the mayor of San Jose says, as we've talked about earlier, that talent is really the reason companies locate. Which, if you're Amazon, which are you going to take, Nashville or Charlotte?
It really depends, and they're going to go through a complicated algorithm that evaluates, one, does it work for our business operations, and then, two, economically, how does it affect our bottom line? the reality is that now, particularly in corporate headquarter moves, significant corporate headquarter moves, and in major manufacturing moves, incentives become kind of the final component to closing that deal. And that's where South Carolina has been particularly effective, because they've put together what is commonly called a closing fund that they can leverage up to almost $1 billion to make a deal close. Mm-hmm. North Carolina didn't get in that game until the Foxconn conversation occurred about a year ago, and in trying to find ways to fill these mega sites scattered around the state, they said, we can come up with $1 billion at the state level. And so they put cash away. They put ways to defer taxes away. That then layers on top of the other incentive components that are primarily tax rebates and job training programs that can build that number fairly significantly in a short period of time.
North Carolina proposed $683 million in incentives to lure Boeing here in 2013, but they chose Washington State. And we've been outbid numerous times by South Carolina. The legislature also kind of ended all the incentives for the film industry, which was doing rather well in North Carolina. When they did, the film industry left completely, lock, stock, and barrel. They're gone. Is there an appetite in Raleigh to do these kinds of things? I mean, if they don't like the film industry, why would they like Amazon?
Well, you look at success stories, and I'll point out Boeing in Charleston. That bid, I believe, was roughly $500 million in state incentives, maybe a little higher than that, but I think it's a rough number. In any case, that was for 2,500 jobs. There are currently 10,000 Boeing employees in Charleston, and that's estimated to go to 40,000 before they're done. It became the attraction for Volvo and Mercedes Sprinter to come in and locate comparable facilities adjacent to that. Mm-hmm. That's a game-changer manufacturing for a community that did not have significant manufacturing prior to that point. Same issues arrive when you're looking at corporate headquarter deals. How do you create a platform that draws new companies in, because companies tend to want to go where they see other companies there, because the rest of the amenities exist. Mm. Access to airport, great roads, distribution centers, and then all the things that make quality of life special.
Greg LeRoy, Ronnie Bryant with the Charlotte Regional Partnership says we shouldn't fear giving away the store, because we will do economic impact analyses for the project and make sure it will be a net positive for the area. But you say that Amazon could qualify for a negative tax rate, offsetting taxes for years to come. Is that something that will be necessary to win this corporate headquarters, or will other factors come into play?
Oh, I think lots of other factors will come into play. And I want to underscore a point that John made, because I think this is the thing that doesn't get understood well enough. You know, all state and local taxes combined as a cost of doing business for the average company in America come to only 2% of their cost structure. It's the business basics: labor, occupancy, raw material, logistics, energy, IT, et cetera. And especially for a headquarters project where labor, you know, white-collar, brainiac labor is the key ingredient. That's really going to drive this decision. It's the executive talent pool. And Amazon's far too smart a company to get hung up on 2% versus 98%. Mm. So it's the business basics that always get you on the short list. And then because of the way this whole system has evolved over 80 years, companies control all the information about where they really intended to go all along, and they can whipsaw and use as straw men places they aren't interested in to try to up the ante with the places that they are really interested in.
That's what's going on here, don't you think?
That's the problem.
Isn't that what's going on? They've already decided where they're going.
They have a sophisticated internal site location capacity. They have a whole tax incentive department that they created 5.5 years ago. I'd be very surprised if they didn't know at least what the short list looked like before they ever went public with this.
So Amazon's not only trying to achieve some sort of benefit from spreading to two different headquarters in the country or in North America. It wants to be less dependent, I understand, on Seattle, which perhaps isn't as welcoming to the company as the company would like it to be. Seattle and Seattleites seem to be blaming Amazon for contributing to the lack of affordable housing, rising costs of living, traffic, you name it, they blame Amazon. Would those same things happen in any city that gets this headquarters?
It could. If you talk to the folks at SAS, they will complain about the fact that MetLife came in and stole all their employees. So it has consequence when someone comes in and has that significant impact. But the reality is Amazon has outgrown its capacity in the Northwest. They've got 5,000 open jobs that they can't fill, because they're in a market that competes too heavily for those same positions. They've got significant traffic and logistic issues. They've got an airport that can't handle everything they need. Mm-hmm. So, and they've got to find a way to kind of spread that across a bigger piece of geography.
Well, evidently the tremendous number of employees that Amazon employs, and they're not the only company in Seattle, so I don't know why – I mean, Microsoft is there, so I don't know why they're getting all the bad press about rising costs of living and gentrifying parts of Seattle that used to be affordable. The same thing would happen here, and we already have a dearth of affordable housing. Would that be part of the deal in some way? Could we massage that so that we don't lose that what little affordable housing we have?
Well, I'm not sure it's affordable housing in the truest sense, but it's available housing for this workforce. And you just compare the raw cost of living in Seattle or San Jose. You pick the town on the West Coast, and it's markedly cheaper here. The traffic patterns are markedly better. Even dropping 50,000 new employees and their families here will have an impact, but we will not have the traffic congestion that you have in the Northwest.
John, do you drive?
I drive every day. But it's comparative. I mean, if you travel to Atlanta, you travel to Boston, you travel to Chicago, you travel to Seattle, Denver, you pick the competitor for us, and we actually have markedly better conditions today.
So we have talked many times on this program with many experts about whether or not tax incentives and other things are good when it comes to providing money to sports stadiums and teams. And some economists say it doesn't really help. You have to pin it on the intangibles when it comes to building a stadium or an arena or help fund a team in some way. Is the same true with this kind of thing, or is it completely different?
I think that's apples and oranges. There's reasons towns want to have major sports and why they invest in them. that is a reputational issue. It's a job and investment attractor. But when somebody's talking about bringing 50,000 jobs at $100,000 a piece, the multiplier effect in terms of how many restaurants are built, which employs that many more cooks and servers, that affects the ability for additional housing units. So all the carpenters and the roofers and the painters, it is significant. As you, and I don't know what the number currently is. It used to be about 10-1. It may be a little different than that now, but that has enormous consequence for not just Charlotte, but for every of the 11 counties or so that kind of are surrounding Mecklenburg.
So there are a bunch of people, Greg, who don't believe in giving incentives of any kind to anyone at any time because they just think you're a private corporation, you got plenty of money, why should we give you corporate welfare, which is essentially how they see it. And, of course, Amazon doesn't need the money. They don't need the money, but they would be foolish not to try to get it from someone. So how should we approach this? How should we think about this? Is it the kinds of jobs that John just spoke about, the fact that if they come here, we're going to have home builders and painters and road pavers and restaurateurs and the list goes on and on, and that's how we balance the equation?
Well, I think the smartest way to look at this equation is to try to look at it from Jeff Bezos' side of the table and ask yourself, what's he looking for and his team? And I think they're looking for lots of brain cells. They're looking for tons of really smart software engineers and lawyers and CPAs and marketers and finance specialists and marketing, advertising brainiacs. And if I were a mayor assembling a bid for this, I would put together my brain trust of all my graduate school deans and my workforce development director, and I would put forth a bid emphasizing all the incredibly smart people I have in my labor market. I think that's what's really going to count here.
Ken, did we do that? Is that how we did it?
I'm not sure we did, but...
I know we invited the public in to give their input, but who else was involved in this aside from the Charlotte Regional Partnership and I've forgotten, maybe the Chamber of Commerce?
Chamber of Commerce contributed this. We had 40 people. Ronnie Bryan had 40 people together that met several times and evaluated sites and put together the package and sent it off.
Mm. Does the state GOP, which controls everything but the governor's office, and the mayor of Charlotte, and the city council, and I guess, well, they control the state. Do they see incentives as a wise investment, or do they see it as a handout?
There's a split of opinions between kind of the Republican leaders, but end of the day, you kind of watch how things played out. They recognize the value and put in place enhancements to incentive programs, put in place dollars that could be used for closing out deals. There is a bias among that group to a rural community, so they have a greater interest in doing things that will draw manufacturing into a rural part of the state that's got higher unemployment. Mm-hmm. But they do recognize the value, and they've participated at multiple levels for most of the most recent corporate headquarters moves you've seen in North Carolina.
Craig Douglas.
So one of the things I think that is getting overlooked in this whole process is, and I think is maybe the most concerning of when you talk about cities betting the store, is that, you know, we've compiled a list of all the cities that are making bids. And I would say probably 9 out of every 10 have cited a non-disclosure agreement that they've inked with Amazon. And so I think when you step back and you talk about what cities are putting forward to make this bid, the frustrating thing as a journalist is you look at this and say, well, if you're potentially pledging taxpayer funding for this, taxpayer incentives, and you're not disclosing what this bid is to taxpayers, what role are you actually playing as a city official, as an elected official to your constituents? And that question has not been really posed to many city officials nationally at this point. And so I applaud places like San Antonio and San Jose. Even if they're not in the running, it's not that big of a risk to them.
If you were still on the Economic Development Committee, John, would you be in favor of pitching this, and how far would you go? Can you go too far? Is it possible that the cost might outweigh the benefits?
No, if I was still in my official role, I would be, and I'm pretty confident that the folks in the partnership have been very involved in these bids. They're attuned to how this works. They recognize the value. And it's the nature of economic development in our state and our community.
John Lasseter is former chair of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, former member of City Council. Greg Leroy, executive director of Good Jobs First. Craig Douglas, director of editorial research at American City Business Journals. They did a whole series of articles on this. And Ken Elkin, senior staff writer at the Charlotte Business Journal. Thank you all.